We're beginning here on the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shlosh Nashim Shayu Shenot B'mita Achat. Continuation of the previous Mishnah that discussed three women being in a single bed. Now here, Nimtza Dam Tachat Emtza'it. And we find them under the middle of the women here. Kulan Tmeot. They all are classified as being a Tmeot. Tachat HaPnimit. On the other hand, if it's found under the inner woman, the bed is up against a wall, and then the access is considered to be the Chitzona, the outer side of the bed. And Pnimit is the inner side of the bed towards the wall. So if you find the Mim under the woman who is near the wall, then Shtaim HaPnimiot Tmeot. Then the two inner women, meaning the woman in the middle, and the one closest to the wall will be Tmeot. Vachitzona Teora. The woman who is towards the outside, to the point of access and egress from the bed, she is considered to be Torah. Tachat Achitzona, on the other hand, if we find the damim under the woman who is closer to the point of access and egress from the bed, Shtayim Achitzonot Tmeot, then she and the middle woman are Tmeot. Vapnimit Tehorah, and the woman who is against the wall will be Torah. Ematai, when is that true that the woman against the wall is Torah? Bizman Shabru Derech Margalota Mita. That's only if they accessed the bed through the foot of the bed. They climbed on individually, but not over each other. If they went the normal way of accessing the bed from the side, then kulan tmeot, because then even the inner woman had to cross over that spot to get to her inner space, and therefore it could have equally come from her as it did from one of the two outer women. Of course, the Gemara is going to have to address the fact that in the previous Mishnah, we seem to have an indication that there are three women sitting in a bed, and they find damim, that they're all tmeot, and there's no differentiation between pnimit and chitzona. And all of a sudden here, our Mishnah starts to distinguish, how do we reconcile between these two halves of the Mishnayot? Now, badka achat mehen, v'nimtzei tehora, if one of these three women checks herself and finds that she is tehora, he tehora, then she has a classification of being tehora, u'shtaim tmeot, and the other two have a classification of being tmeot, badku shtaim. If two of the women check themselves, umatzu teorot, and they both find themselves to be teorot, hein teorot, ushlishit mea. We assume that they are teorot, and the third one is the cause of the issue. Shlashtan, if they all three of them check, umatzu teorot, and they all find themselves to be teorot, kulan tmeot. Then we go back to the original stand, which is that they're all tmeot. And that has to do with the end of the previous Mishnah as well, that if we cannot assign, either through circumstantial evidence or through evidence that one of these women is tmeot, and they all three look like they should not be tmeot, then we would treat them equally, and we have to suspect that the dam came from somewhere, and since it came from somewhere, all three of them are classified as being tmeot. L'mah ha'davar domeh, what is this case similar to? Gal tamei, shnitarev ben shnei galim torim, three piles of rocks. Under one of these piles, there is tumat amet. We just don't know which one out of these three. They checked one of the piles, and they see there's nothing under it. Hu tahor, then that pile, that area is considered to be tahor. Ushnaim tmeim, the remaining two have the safek tuma in them. Shnaim, if they check two of the piles, umitza'o tahorim, and then they find both of those piles to be tahor, heim tahorim, those two areas are considered to be tahor. Shlushi tmeim, we assume the tuma is under the third pile. Shloshtan, if they check all three of the piles, umitza'o tahorim, and now they find that there is no tuma under any one of the piles, then we say, goes back to the original status, which is kulam tmein, kulan tmeim, they all consider to be tmei, divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir Omer, kol davar shehu b'chazkat tuma, anything that has a chazaka, an assumption of tuma, lolom hu b'tumato, it remains under that category, until you can clearly identify where the tuma is. So in the first two cases, where there was still a pile that was unchecked, over there we can assume that the tuma is there. But once we've cleared all three of them out, then there's nowhere else for the tuma to be. It must have been under one of the piles, and we're just not identifying it properly. So until you can identify the tuma, we're not going to remove this chazaka, we're not going to remove this assumption of tuma until we clarify that issue. You can check, and you can eliminate the chazaka of tuma. You check either until the sela, the bedrock of the btula, or to ground that was virgin ground but untouched before. And you know for certain then that the tuma cannot be below that level. So the chamim say that if you do a full and thorough check, then you can assume that the chazaka tuma is removed, even though you haven't found the tuma. According to Rabbi Meir, until you find the tuma, you cannot assume there's no tuma over here. Rabbi Meir asks the question that we mentioned in the Mishnah, which is, Maishna Reisha, delo maflig, umayishna sneifa deka maflig. What's the difference between the previous Mishnah, where we had the three women, and they found a stain on the bed, and all three of them are considered to be tmeot, whereas over here, we have a distinction between the pnimit and the chitzona. Why do the Mishnayot have this difference in them? So, Amar Rabbi Ami, v'mishula vot. The difference is how they're set up on the beds. As Rashi points out, the Amar Rabbi Ami Reisha, the first half, the earlier part of the Mishnah, talking about a case of mishula vot, kufot, duvuchot, yachad. That the women are adjacent to each other. They're right up against each other in the Reisha case. So in the Reisha case, there's really cannot make the distinction between the inner one, the outer one, the middle one, because they're all basically on top of each other, adjacent to each other. And being adjacent to each other creates a situation where if we have a stain here, we're going to assume that all are tmeot. On the other hand, in the second Mishnah, since there is some spacing between them, that will allow us to differentiate between the inner, outer, and the middle woman over here. Now that's Rashi's explanation of what the word Mishula Vot means. On the other hand, the Ri says that Yesh Lefaresh, the Seifa Ari Mishula Vot, that Rashi explained that was the first half of the Mishnah that was talking about a case of Mishula Vot, and the Ri says, no, it's the latter half. Klomer Mekuvanot Kolachat Bim Koma. Mishula Vot does not mean intertwined or adjacent like Rashi says, but Mishula Vot means that each one has their own area. Lo yut kufot umruvot zubazu. That they are not intertwined, but rather independent and separate. Uperish rach katuv, de mishalche shal chufesh mitpardut mizumizu. And the rach also explains that the mishulavot here means in parallel. That they are laying in parallel, but not adjacent or intertwined, as opposed to the reisha. The explanation in the end turns out to be the same, which is that the first case is a case where they are intertwined, and the latter case is a case where they are separate, they're separate areas. Just the question of the word mishulavot, according to Rashi, that describes the situation in the ratio where they are intertwined or adjacent to each other. Whereas, according to the Ri and the Rach, mishulavot comes to explain the seifa, a case where they are laying in parallel, but they do not overlap and they're not intertwined. So now, badka achat v'chule, lama le the mitne, the ma ze dome. Why do they have to add in this additional comparison in the Mishnah to the piles with tumata meit under them? Because the case by here, by Nidak, stands on its own. And what's the necessity for creating this comparison? What does it add for us to the situation? It says, Achid kamar luhu Rabbi Meir l'Rabbanan. This is actually a conversation, a discourse between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan. Maishna b'dam dolo paligitu. Why is it that by the case of dam in our Mishnah here, you agreed to me that until we find out which of the women is tmeot, we assume that they are all tmeot? Umayishna b'gal de paligitu. And why do you argue with me with the case of Gal, where if you have the three piles there, Rabbanan say, if we can't find the Tumah, and we've checked thoroughly, then there is no Tumah here. So Rabbanan, the Rabbanan respond to Rabbi Meir, Bishlama hotam ema orev natla. So over there, by the case of Tumata Meit, we can suggest that the Tumata Meit disappeared, because either a raven came and took it, or some outside variable affected the fact that there is Tumah here. Animal, whatever, decomposition, whatever it is that took away the tumata meit, but it no longer exists, and there is a plausible explanation for why it no longer exists. Halacha, over here, by haidam, meheichato. You have to explain how this blood got here. And we can't assume that it just came from outside, because that's a far-fetched explanation to say that the dam came from the outside. When you have three women here who are laying on a bed and there's a stain on the bed, the most likely explanation for the dam here is the women. And until we can clarify that situation, we can find out which woman contributed or caused the dam to be here, we're going to assume that they're all tmeot, because we don't have a good alternative explanation to how the dam got here. Tanya, we have a braita. Amar Rabbi Meir, maseh b'shikma shel Kfar Sava. They had a case with a sycamore in Kfar Sava, shayu machzikim batuma, that there was known to be tuma under this tree. Ubadku b'lo mitzo. They checked. And they didn't find anything then. The Yamim Nishvava Ruach, a later date, after some period of time it elapsed, a strong wind comes, Vakarto, and it uproots the tree. And they found a skull that was there at the base of the tree, or by the roots of the tree. And you see here that checking is not sufficient. So Amrlo, Misham Raya, the Chachamim say that's not a proof. Amar lo badku kol tzorko. They didn't check it sufficiently. I mean that you can't prove from here that checking does not work. All you can prove from here is that they didn't check sufficiently. Had they checked sufficiently, then we wouldn't have had this problem. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Maseh B'Ma'arah Shel Shichin Shayu Machzikim Ba Tum'ah. There was this case in a cave in Shechem that they used to know that there was Tumah in there. Ubadku ashegia the karkel. They checked, they dug down until they got to untouched ground. Shaita chalaka ketziporin, that was smooth like a nail. I mean, they knew nobody had ever dug down that deep before. Velo mitzo, and they didn't find this Tumah. Liyamim, after, again, a period of time had elapsed, nichnusu bapoalim bipnei gshamim. There were some workers who went to hide out there from the rain. They wanted to shelter themselves. Vinitsu bikardemotehem. And with their spades,
or their pickaxes,
they dug up or they banged into the ground. Umitso machteshet mleyaitzimot. And they found a
mortar.
They found a tray or box full of bones. So again, the Chachamim respond the same way. Amrlo misham raya. Again, but you're trying to bring a proof from there that checking doesn't work. Imer by the code tzorcho, that they didn't check it properly. Again, that all it tells us is that the check wasn't sufficient or thorough enough. Tani abashalomer maseh b'sela beit choron. V'machzikin ba'tumah. Again, another place where they thought there was tumah. V'lo yachlu chachamim livdot. B'nei shaitam ruba. They wanted to check it, to clear out the area so that people could walk there. But the expanse was too big. And they couldn't dig out the whole expanse. So there was no way to check for this tumah. V'yah sham zaken echad v'Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya shemo. They had this one elder named Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. And he had a suggestion. He had advice for them. Amalem. Hiviu li sadinim. Bring me sheets. Hiviu lo sadinim. So they brought him sheets. V'shar'an b'mayim. And he soaked them in water. Upasan alehem. And then he spread them across this entire area, this expanse where they thought the tumah was. Makom ta'ara yavesh. The area that was tahor remained dry. Makom tum'ah lach. The area that is tum'ah, it became wet. So Rashi explains that that means that the place where the tum'ah was ground that had already been turned over, softened up, and that ground absorbed the water from the sheets. And therefore, the ground where it was wet indicated that that was an area where it had been dug or touched before, and that's where the tum'ah was. The areas where the ground did not absorb the water, those areas were tahor. On the other hand, the Tosafot says it's the sadinim kai, second of the sheets. But Tosafot has the opposite girsa in our Gemara. It turns out to be the same thing that Rashi is suggesting, but just the girsa is different, which he says, makom tara lach, place that was tahor remained wet. Wet, referring to the sheets. The sheets remained wet because the ground did not absorb the water. On the other hand, the makom tuma was yavesh, because the sheets were yavesh, because the water was absorbed by the ground. Then Tosafot mentions that there are some Sfarim that have the exact opposite girsa, and it's referencing the karka, which is the way Rashi has it, and the way our Gemara has the girsa. So Vodko, and then they went ahead and they checked the area, which had indicated was Tumah, Umatsu Bor Gadol Mleatzamot, and they found a large pit full of bones. So Tana Hua Bor, Shmilei Yishmael Ben Netanya Chalalim. That pit, the source of the bones of that pit, came from Yishmael Ben Netanya, Dichtiv, Vabor Asher Yishlich Sham Yishmael Et Kol Pigarei Anashim Asher Yika, Biyad Gedalia. So all the people that were killed by Yishmael, all of their corpses, he threw into this pit. So that's the pit that they're referencing over here. They were killed at the hand of Gedalia ben Achikam. Mar says, wait a minute, Gedalia Hargan? What do you mean? Why does this have to do with Gedalia ben Achikam? He didn't kill them. Hello, Yishmael Hargan. Yishmael was the one who killed all these people and then assassinated Gedalia ben Achikam. So why is it that we're blaming Gedalia for this? Ela mitoch she'elo lachush atzat Yochanan ben
Kareach
v'lo chash malei akadu alav aktuv kil haragan. Yochanan comes to Gedalia ben Achikam and he says that he thinks Yishmael ben Netanya is going to lead a coup against Gedalia and that he's going to come and assassinate him. Gedalia ben Achikam would refuse to accept the Lashon Hara, as he calls it here, and therefore he didn't believe him. Because he didn't believe him, that's exactly what happened. And Yishmael ben Netanya comes, assassinates Gedalia ben Achikam, and kills all these people. But then why is Gedalia ben Achikam to blame if he wasn't willing to accept the Lashon Hara? That's because, Amarava, Hai Lishna Bisha, Afa Bidlukubu, Elo Mibai, Michishle Mibai. Even though when it comes to Lashon Hara, one may not accept the Lashon Hara to make it a definitive statement or to draw a definitive conclusion about the situation, nevertheless, one has to be suspicious in these cases. So here, even though Gedalia ben Achikam did not have to accept Lashon Hara, he at least should have been suspicious that maybe some of this was true. And if it was true, he should have protected himself or ensured that Yochanan would not have caused all this problem. And because of that, Gedalia ben Achikam is partially to blame for everything that happened because he didn't take the proper precautions to stop Yochanan from executing all these people. Hanu b'nei Galila, that there were these two people in the Galil that had rumors circulating about them, that they were murderers or they had killed someone. And it seems like the government officials, Roman officials, were looking for them. Atu dekamei de Rabbi Tarfon. They came to Rabbi Tarfon. Amru lei letamrinan. Mar, can you hide us so that we don't get caught by the officials? Amru eichen ne'avid. What can I do here? Ilo antarinchu chazu yotaychu. If I don't hide you, then they're going to find you. Atamrinchu, if I do hide you. Amru rabbanan ad lishna bishna. When it comes to lashon hara, over here, rumors. Afagav de lekubule lo miboy, mechesh le miboy. Even though you cannot accept lashon hara, I still have to be suspicious of this lashon hara. So therefore, I cannot hide you in this instance. It's very interesting. Rashi says, what do you have to be choshesh for over here? He says, v'shem haraktem. Maybe you did kill somebody. V'asur latzil etchem. And therefore, it would be inappropriate for me to shelter you when you are really deserving of the punishment that would come about. At the end, Tosafot says that the reason that he didn't want to hide him, and he brings from the Shiltot, is because he would then be in trouble with the government. He says, I don't have to risk my life or risk my possessions that the government is going to come after me because I'm taking care of fugitives if I don't know whether you need to be protected or you're really deserving of the punishment. So either way, it has very interesting implications over here, because here we're talking about non-Jewish authorities, and the non-Jewish authorities are coming because these people are murderers or killers and might be deserving of a punishment for that. And Rabbi Tarfon is saying that we cannot hide these people. Either it's, according to Rashi, asur to hide them, because they are deserving of the proper punishment, or according to Tosafot, you're not enjoined to hide these individuals and put yourself at such a risk. So he said to them, Zil atun tamru nafshaychu. You know what? The best suggestion is you go hide yourselves, so that we're not involved, but we're not going to turn you over to authorities, but you go hide yourselves. That way, we at least are taking into consideration the rumors that are spreading, but we're not going to believe them fully. So we'll let you go hide yourselves and not turn you over to the authorities. Now the Gemara digresses into a parenthetical discussion. Tosafot says that involved here is some form of Lashon Hara, although again, the case isn't so clear that there is Lashon Hara. It says, Vayomer Shem Moshe al tira. Shem says to Moshe, do not fear fighting against Og. Michdei, Sichon v'Og achei avu. Sichon and Og were brothers. Damar mar, Sichon v'Og bnei achia bar Shem chazai havu. They were both children of this individual.
It was actually mentioned in Bereishit Rabbah, which refers to the Bnei Elukim that came down to the Aretz. He was a Malach, and when they married the Bnot Adam, they created the Nephilim. This Ben Elukim that got together with Bnot Adam produced these two Nephilim, these two giants, Og and Sichon.
Maishnami Og, that came Mistafe. Why was Moshe afraid of Og? Or Maishnami Sichon, the Log Mistafe. And by Sichon, he has no such fear. So Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimba Yochai, Mitshuvato Shel Oto Tzadik, Ata Yodea, Ma Yabli Bo. From the answer or the response of that Tzadik, you know what he was thinking. Amar Shema Tamod Lo Zchut Shel Avram Avinu. The fear that Moshe had was that maybe the zchut that Og had from helping out Avram Avinu, that would stand for him, Shnemar. Vayevo HaPalit, Vayeged Avraham HaYivri. The Palit over here, Vamar Rabbi Yochanan, Ze Og Shepalat, Midora Mabul. It's talking about Og, who escaped or survived the Dora Mabul. And he was the one who came to inform Avram Avinu that Lot had been taken captive. Moshe was worried that that zchut of helping out Avraham would help him in this situation. And that would prevent Moshe from being able to overcome him. And to that, Hashem says, Al tira, don't fear him. Again, what's the Lashon Hara here? It's not clear. Tosafot brings the Midrash that says that Og Melech Bashan had ulterior motives. He really came to Avraham to tell him that Lot was captured, because he knew that Avraham would go to protect Lot and go out to battle on behalf of Lot, and Og was counting on the fact that Avram wouldn't return from the battle, that he'd be killed in the battle, and then he'd be able to take Sarah as his wife. That's what the Midrash says. So the question of the Lashon Hara here, when Hashem says to Moshe al tira, don't fear, the Midrash seems to be indicating the reason that he shouldn't fear is because he had ulterior motives. Ulterior motives, which would be, quote-unquote, Lashon Hara, about what Og had done. And so since this whole story has some form of Lishina Bisha, some Lashon Hara associated with it, the Gemara brings it down as a parenthetical in the flow of the Gemara over here. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, back to the Anita topics. Beged Shavad Bo Ketem, piece of clothing that had a stain in it, but now you can't find the stain. Mavir Lav Shivas Vamanim Umevat Lo. You put in, we're going to see in the next Mishnah, that there are these seven cleansing agents, that if one uses that to launder a Beged, launder a piece of clothing, that renders whatever ketem, whatever tumah is in there to be null and void. So that's what you have to do in this case. If you lost the ketem in there, you wash the beged with this process, and then you know that the ketem is either a batel or not a ketem at all. Shimon Elazar Omer, Shimon Elazar says, no, but go shkunot shkunot. You have to check it area by area. Abda boshich vadzera. So now, if you had, this is a case where you lost the ketem, a stain from a nida in it. We're abda boshich vadzera. We know that there was shich vadzera in the beged, but we can't find where it is. Chadash, if it's a new beged, but go b'machat. Take a pin, and you poke at the beged. The area where the shich vadzera is will be hardened, and therefore it'll provide resistance for the pin in that area, and you'll know that's where the shich vadzera is. B'shachuk, if they are already begadim that are worn and worn down already, botko b'chamat, then you hold it up to the sunlight, and you'll be able to check there. The assumption being that a worn beged, the threads would be spread out more, they would not be so tight or close together, and that would leave gapping. So if you held it up to the sun, you would see that gapping in the beged. Except for the place where the shich vadzera is. The shich vadzera would harden or seal up the areas where it was. And so if you held it up to the sun, you'd be able to identify that. That's only true in a worn beged. In a new beged where all the weave is tight, then the sun doesn't help you, and that's why you have to use the test of the machat. Tana, ein shchuda pchuta mishlosh etzbaot. What does it mean to check shchunot shchunot? It means there, a shchuna is not less than 3x3 etzbaot. You have to check them section by section of 3x3 etzbaot and check it, go through it until you find where the ketem is. Tan Rabbanan, beged she'avad bo kilayim. You have a beged in which kilayim was lost. Harizeh loyim kerenu lo'oved kochavim. You may not sell it to a non-Jew. Even though there's no restriction in kilayim for a non-Jew, nevertheless, the problem is that it will be sold to a non-Jew, and then a non-Jew will then resell it to a Jew. And the Jew will not know that there's kilayim in here because there's no way for him to discern. It was kilayim that was lost in there. There's no indication of kilayim in his beged. But he has sent him ardat l'chamor. He can't make it for a throw or a type of saddle for the donkey. Even though there, again, there's no iser of kilayim to sit on it, because iser kilayim only applies to a beged and halat, to wearing something. Over here, you're sitting on it. That is fine. Problem is that after you've sat on it or used like that, a person may pull it around himself to warm himself up in a situation, or he may later cut it up and use it for a beged. And if there's kilayim in it, he won't be aware of that fact. So therefore, you can't take this beggar that has kilayim in it. What can you do with it? Oh, semimenu tachrichim demei. You can use it for shrouds for a person who has passed away. So I'm Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, we must conclude from this, zot omeret, mitzvot b'telot atid lavo. That atid lavo, there will be no mitzvot, because otherwise how could you bury this mate in tachrichim of kilayim? When he awakens, latid lavo, he'll be wearing kilayim. You must conclude from that that there will be no mitzvot latid lavo, and therefore it's no problem of kilayim. So amalei abaye v'itema rav dimi v'amar rav mani amar rav yani lo shanu ala l'savdo. That's only during the part when he's being eulogized. Ala kovro asur, but to bury him in that is asur. If it's only when it's l'savdo to eulogize him, then you're not permanently putting him in this tachrichim, and it has no impact or indication about what will be the atid lavo. Amalei, lavit marla, don't we have a statement on that? Rabbi Yochanan, afilu lekovro. Do have a statement for Rabbi Yochanan who says that you can even bury him in it. Rabbi Yochanan the Tamei, and Rabbi Yochanan is l'shitato, don Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv, b'meitim chufshi. What is it meant in Tehillim when it says that those that are dead are free? Kemin shemeit adam naseh chufshi min mitzvot. Once a person passes away, he's free of the obligation of mitzvot. So here you can put the kilayim on him because the person who is dead is free of mitzvot. He doesn't have any requirement to abide by the mitzvot anymore. So you can put this kilayim on him. He would also have to subscribe to the fact that latid lavo, there are no mitzvot. Because even if you say meitim or chavshim in a mitzvot, that still does hint address the issue of latid lavo. When they wake up, they'll still be in these tachrichim of kilayim when they will be chayav in mitzvot. So it must be that Rabbi Yochanan believes both of those are true. Number one, that once the person passes away, they're chofshim in a mitzvot. They are free of the mitzvot, meaning they are not required to abide by the mitzvot. But in addition to that, that atid lavo, they also not be chayavin in mitzvot, or there will be no mitzvot atid lavo. This little piece of Gemara raises a number of issues. You can see here that Tosafot has a number of discussions on this issue. The first of which is, why don't we say that it's batal birov? You lost some kilayim in a big beged. Why don't we say over here that it's batal birov? What happened to Bitol in this case? Tosafot mentions here a chiddush that he also mentions by Basar B'chalav in the Gemara in Chulin as well as in the Gemara in Vodah Zarah, that Batal Berov is only in a case of Tarovet. It's only a case where we have a mixture. If something Asur, something Mutar, the two of them come together, the Heter or the Isur will tell the other one if it's the Rov, if it's the majority. Over here, where independently, if you talk about wool, it's mutar. You talk about linen independently, it's mutar. It's only the mixture that makes them asurim. It's only when they are joined together that is a problem. So then you can't have bittul barov here, because the whole isur is generated by the mixture. Without the mixture, each one independently is mutar. And therefore, the mixture here cannot be mevatel. Tosfot says the same thing with basar b'chalav. Why don't we say batel barov? Why don't we say that when it comes to basar b'chalav, we just say that it's batel barov? Why do we need this whole issue of tam and shishim? He says, because again, it's the same idea here. The basar by itself is mutar. The chalav by itself is mutar. It's only when they come together, the mixture itself is what becomes a sur. So you can't talk about bittul in that case. Bittul is only when you have something that's already a sur and you're mixing it with something that's heter. So then you can be mevatel the isur. Over here, there's no isur until they come together. And each item independently is not a sur, and therefore you can't talk about bittul. Number two is that the fact that we said that the kilayim was lost in here, that is because if you knew where the kilayim was, you could take it out. Or if you knew where the kilayim was, it wouldn't be restricted from selling it to a non-Jew or making it to Maradat. Because it's obvious where the kilayim is, then nobody would repurchase that from a non-Jew because they would know there's kilayim in it, or they'd remove it if they did purchase it. As well as when it comes to the throw of the donkey, if you were going to use it to make a baget afterwards from it or wrap yourself in it, you'll know that there's kilayim in there. So the fact that the kilayim is not known is what causes the problem over here. The last thing that Tosafot discusses, this is an issue that is raised by Tosafot in a number of places in Shas, in Brachot, in Psachim, in Bava Batra, in Menachot. We've seen it already a couple of times, which is the issue of tzitzit on the meat, that they used to wrap the meat in tzitzit. And the question is, how do we do that? The Gemara raises in other places something called Loeg Darosh, that it's inappropriate to make fun of people who are poor. Now, over here, when we're talking about people who are poor, we're talking about people who have passed away, who no longer have the ability to perform mitzvot. And therefore, for instance, it's inappropriate to go into a cemetery with your tzitzit hanging out, because it's as if you're making fun of the meitim, you're making fun of those that passed away, that they can no longer perform the mitzvot of tzitzit, and that you can't perform the mitzvot of tzitzit. So the Tosfot asks over here, how could it be that we're burying a meit in a beged kilayim? If we bury him in a beged kilayim, it's as if we're making fun of them, that they can no longer be mekayim the mitzvot. So the Rashbam suggests an answer, which is, over here, the kilayim is not a sur, because the isur kilayim involves two things. One is, it has to be derech levisha, you have to be put it on. And number two, it has to be derech hana'ah, in case where you get benefit from it. Over here, he says the mate gets no benefit from it. He's not wearing it in a way that he gets hana'ah from it, so therefore there is no isur kilayim. So that's why the Rashbam says that there's not a problem here, because even for a chai, someone who's alive, this would not be a problem of kilayim because there's no benefit. Tosafot rejects this because the Gemara in other places that we just said says that tzitzit is a problem for the mate. And even though tzitzit also is the same thing, you only can derech halah, derech of wearing it, is one chayav in tzitzit. So even though the mate can't wear the beged, nevertheless, the Gemara still says there's a problem of walking around with your tzitzit out inside of the cemetery. The Rabbeinu Tam makes a suggestion here, according to the Tosafot HaRosh, that Rabbi Matam heard this from the Ziknei Lutir, that tzitzit are unique. Tzitzit are unique because they are shkula keneged kol mitzvot. They are equal to all the mitzvot, and therefore it's a unique mitzvah that represents the idea of all mitzvot. And therefore it's inappropriate for one to walk around with their tzitzit out in front of the mate, because that's a slap in the face to say, look, I can do all the mitzvot, and you can't do all the mitzvot. But any one particular mitzvah, like kilayim, we don't say this issue, we don't raise this issue of loeg darosh, that it's making fun of the mates. And then Tosafot raises an issue about how we bury our dead today, which is that when we bury the dead, we put them into talitot. We put them in tzitzit. But when we wrap them up in tzitzit, we are posel the tzitzit. We either remove the tzitzit from the beggar, or we cut them and posel the tzitzit when we bury them today. How can we do this? Because that's exactly doing what the Gemara had suggested not to do, which is that if we put a mitzvah around them as if they're making fun of them, that they can't perform the mitzvah. So here we're putting a four-cornered beggar on them, and then we're posel the tzitzit to put it on them. So the Re suggests over here that there was actually a change in the dynamic over time. And that is that originally they did bury the mate with tzitzit and proper tzitzit. And that is because in their day, they used to wear tzitzit, and they were makpin on the mitzvah of tzitzit. So when they put the tzitzit on when they died, it was not like making fun of them. These are people who were makayin the mitzvah during their lifetime. And we wrapped them up in their death, it was as if a siman that they kept this mitzvah during their lifetime. But today, where people are not makpid on the mitzvah tzitzit, this is interesting, just in the Rishonim in general, the Ibn Ezra speaks about this, Tosafot speaks about this. In their day, there was not a hakpadah, number one, on the mitzvah tzitzit, and number two, on the mitzvah tefillin. They both discussed this issue, that people were not careful or engaged in the mitzvot of tzitzit and tefillin, and therefore, when they bury people, if you bury them in tzitzit, there would be no greater making fun of the mate. Here, they didn't keep the mitzvah tzitzit during their lifetime, and now you're putting tzitzit on in their death, as if they, a siman that they kept all the mitzvot, or that they kept the mitzvah tzitzit, that would be inappropriate. What about those that do keep the mitzvah tzitzit, so we should leave their tzitzit on and not people sell them? So over here, Tosfot says something that we're going to see later in the Masechta, we don't differentiate, because that will embarrass those that did not keep the mitzvah. If they kept the mitzvah, fine. They don't keep the mitzvah, then it'll be embarrassment, so we don't create differentiation. We keep a single standard for everyone, where we posel the tzitzit of everyone. In addition, we have a memra from Abba Shaul in Masechet Smachot that says that he told his children that when you bury me without my tzitzit on. So Tosafot Davir mentions, the Tosafot the Rosh also mentions that a number of times in Shas where we, despite the fact that what seems from the Gemara, we would not put the mate in a position where we're putting posel tzitzit on them. Nevertheless, we're guided what he calls by the Sfarim Achitzonim, by the Masechtot Aktanot, and they override the din that we have in the din of the Gemara. One of the examples he brings is Minyan Diyoma. He says that the Gemara in Megillah says that we only read Chazon Yishayahu Shabbat, what we read for the Haftorah for Shabbat Chazon, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. This upcoming Shabbos, we'll read that as the Haftorah. Only when Rosh Chodesh Av falls out on Shabbos, that's when we read Chazon Yishayahu. So that's what the Gemara in Megillah says. Yet, but the Medrash Psikta says that we read Chazon Yishayahu on the Shabbat Lifnei Tisha B'Av. So despite the fact that the Gemara has an explicit statement about what of Torah, we nevertheless disregard that and favor what's written in the Midrash in the Psikta. The other thing that the Tosafot Rosh here brings is that we, in our day, do not wear tzitzit on a regular basis because all of our begadim, all of our clothing, are not four-cornered clothing. In the time of the Gemara, they had four-cornered clothing all the time. And therefore, they wore tzitzit all the time. Nothing to do with putting on or ensuring that they were mekayim mitzvah tzitzit. It was a part of their daily lives because they always wore four-cornered begadim. If that's the case, when they buried them, they also buried them in tzitzit. Today, where we don't wear four-cornered begadim, or to be chayav in tzitzit, we intentionally put on a four-cornered begad in order to have tzitzit, which he does encourage. He says that it is different today and that the mitzvah may not have that standing like it did in their day, but he says that still we have to force the issue to have tzitzit on. We're not becoming the mitzvah just because of the type of clothing that we wear. And therefore, in their day, it was appropriate to put tzitzit on a mate because it was something that was a part of their everyday life. For us, where we only wear tzitzit because we intentionally put on the four-cornered beged, for us, the mitzvah tzitzit is very different. And therefore, they don't bury the mate today with the tzitzit. And that is our practice today, that when they bury the mate, they put the tachrichim on, and they put a talit around the mate, but they do cut or they remove the tzitzit from the talit that they put around the mate. Well, now we're going to continue. Amar Rav Rafam Bar Papa Rav Chista, beged shavo b'kilayim. Kilayim is lost in a beged, tovo mutar. What you do is you dye the beged, and then the beged is mutar. That is because dye takes differently to wool than it does to linen. Wool dyes very easily, and the color takes easily, whereas by linen it's much harder. So if you dye a beged, you'll know where the linen is inside of it, or you can determine where it is. And if you see that the dye takes, or the color takes evenly throughout the beged, you'll know that there is no kilayim in there. So this could be the test for determining whether the kilayim is there. Amalei rov l'rafa from bar papa, m'nalei the sabaha. My elder, how do you know that this is the case? Amalei matnitani. It's our mishnah. That's not budeik ad shemagil l'selah. In our mishnah, chachamim say that you can check until you get to bedrock. Vi leka emar orev nata. And if you can't find it, we just assume that some outside variable affected the situation here, and that's why there's no more tumata mate. Hachinami, you could say the same thing here. Imra b'kitna ba'dadi. Originally, this was a beged kilayim. Lo salik lohu tziva. And once you dye it and you see that the coloring does not have the differentiation that would indicate the difference between wool and linen, came into the idea, and now we can't find it anymore, Amar Mintar Minater Natar, that it slipped out or it fell out. Whatever it was that was kilayim here, left the begin, and since it left the begin, now we don't have to worry about it. Because we've done the full test, a test that's efficacious enough that we should be able to rely on it. And once we've done that, for instance, by the tumata mate, if you dug down to the bedrock, that's sufficient. And over here, dyeing the beged would be enough. And if the test comes up negative, you assume that something happened. Either the tumata mate was taken by a raven or some outside variable. And over here, we'll assume that the kilayim, the linen, fell out of the beged. Amar Rav Acha Brei Rav Yeva Mishmei de Marzucha. Hayman de Rami Chuta de Kitna Beglime de Imra. Someone who put linen threads into a woolen beged. Vinetke. And then he afterwards removes them. He's not sure if he got them all out. He went afterwards and he takes them out and he thinks he got most of them out. He's not sure he got all of them out. Shapir dami, he can wear the beged even though the safek remains. My time up, midoraito, shatnez ktiv. Mina Torah, it says shatnez. Achyesh shua, tevi, venos. They're looking at the word shatnez to be an acronym for these three words. Shua, tevi, and nos. According to Rashi, shua is the combing of the materials. Tevi is the spinning. The nose is the arigaz, the weaving of the materials. And according to Rashi, they all have to be done together. In order to be kilayim in a Torah, you have to comb them together, you have to spin the wool and linen together, and then you have to weave them together. Rabbanan hu, the gazrubei, and the Rabbanan who goes there, even when you don't have all three of these processes done together, that there's still a din of kilayim. Tosafot here takes issue with Rashi. One of the main issues he has is by tzitzit. By tzitzit, we say that there's a problem of kilayim. If you have a beged of linen, a four-cornered beged of linen, you have to put tchelet in it. Tchelet is made from wool. That is a din of kilayim. Over there, why is it kilayim? All you do is tie the strings under the corner of the beged. Why is that kilayim in a Torah? According to you, Rashi, the only way it's kilayim from the Torah is we do all three things together. So Tosafot disagrees with Rashi's understanding of nose being weaving. And rather, he says the word nose is an issue of spinning. And so actually, Yeshua Tevi Vinoz is the processing. But Yachdav, the weaving or tying of the linen and the wool together, is a problem of Kilayim, independent of these other items. And that's why by Tzitzit it'll be a problem. But because of that, Tosafot translates the words Yeshua Tevi Vinoz differently, being nose being spinning instead of weaving, that Rashi says. But either way, because we're only dealing with an Isur de Rabbanan over here, it becomes a Safek de Rabbanan, and a Safek de Rabbanan, we're going to the Kula. In that case, Shari, and since he doesn't know if he fully got it out, it's Mutar because of that Safek. How do you know when it says Shatnez in the Torah, and you're using, this is an acronym, that you need all three of these processes to be done together in order for it to be Kilayim? Maybe each one independently would be Kilayim. So it's or. The Hilchata, and the Gemara concludes, Kimar Zutra, the loch is like Mar Zutra, that you need all three of them together. The fact that the Torah only used one word to describe this is indicative of the fact that it must be that all processes have to be done together to be a problem of Kilayim. Turn up banan. Beged Savua, Mitamei Mishum Ketem. It's a very important Halacha the Maisa issue, which is that if you have a colored Beged, then the Chachamim were still gozer by a colored Beged Mishum Ketem. If a woman has a stain on it, then she'll be tmeah. We'll have to suspect that she is a nida. We're not by Yosef Omer inu mitamei mishum ketem, and this is the halacha that a colored beged does not have a din of ketem, as Rashi says over here. Shena ketem nikar bo kemare dam gamur, because one cannot properly discern whether the dam that's on this beged is dam, because the coloration of the beged affects the color of the dam, and therefore you can never discern whether it's properly it's dam nida. Chamim were not gozer by bigdei tzivonim, by colored bigadim. And that is why, except for the shivnikim, women in general are encouraged to use colored bigadim, or today now they have even colored pads, special pads for women, so they do not have problems of ktamim during their non-shivnikim times, because when they're wearing color, there is no issue of ketim, and it can prevent a lot of issues. Shalot iknu bigdei tzivonim lishal alahakela kitmeim. They're only mitakein that women can wear colored clothing in order that we could be more lenient with regards to their stains. Tiknu, we were mitakein. Sounds like they had a policy that women had to wear colored bigadim. My takninu, where do you have such a policy? Ella, no, they have to read it this way. Shalot hutru bigdei tzivonim lishal alahakela kitmeim. There was a dispensation given to the women to wear colored clothing in order to be mekel on their ketamim. Hutru, miklal da siri. Hutru means that you say that it's mutar, they had this dispensation, sounds like otherwise it would have been problematic. In, that is the case. Adetnan, this is the Mishnah at the end of Sota, but Pumus shel Aspanios, with Vespasian's invasion, or basically with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, gazru ala tarot chatanim ve'ala irus. They were gozer to take down the level of simcha, especially at weddings. As we have the minhag today to break a glass, really put ashes on the head of the chatan. So here we have the atarot chatanim. They have the crowns that the chatanim wore by Yerus. As Rashi says, these are bells that used to ring at the weddings. They took down the level of simcha because, or to acknowledge the fact that we were left without the mikdash, or that we were in a state of destruction. Bikshu l'gzara bigdei tzivonim. In addition to that, they wanted to include colored clothing. Meaning that because we were bavelut over Churban HaBayit, again, this is appropriate, minyana diyoma, that here we are in the Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. According to many, this is Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, or during the 9 days, that we have the minhag to have certain things of avelut that revolve around the Mikdash. Over here, these gezerot were gezerot that they put in place because of Churban HaBayit. And one of those gezerot they thought about was restricting the wearing of colored clothing. So Amrei Ha'adifa G'day L'Halkela Kitmehem. Nevertheless, they waived that isur, or they decided not to make colored clothing problematic because of the other benefits. The benefits of the fact that it would protect the women from having the problems of stains on their bigadim. And they saw that benefit as outweighing the necessity to be gozer, not to wear these big day tzivonim to commemorate the destruction of the Mikdash. Okay, we'll stop over here.